The following program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. The more you know about our meat, the better. That's the bottom line at Whole Foods Market. Our standards require no added hormones and no antibiotics, ever. Our partnerships with farmers and ranchers allow us to offer the highest quality local and organic choices. And our newest program, the Global Animal Partnership's 5-step animal welfare rating, sets unprecedented standards in the industry for beef, pork, and chicken. Standards you can see, labeled, when you walk into our stores. Visit WholeFoodsMarket.com for more information on the 5-step rating. Because, hey, the more you know, the better.
Hi, everybody. You're tuned in to the HeritageRadioNetwork.com. The show is Flash Talks Cash. We're about money, making it, spending it, saving it, what to do with it when you get it. I'm your host, Joanne Flash Fleming, and I'm here with my co-host, Andrew Casper, the Friendly Ghost Newman.
I don't get it.
Yeah, well, Casper was invisible.
I'm here.
Andrew,
do you want to talk about something right now?
Andrew showed up.
Thank you, Jack.
10 seconds
Thank
ago.
You, Jack.
My engineer, I want to thank him.
Hey guys,
Jack was here on time. I was here on time.
Andrew,
did I miss anything?
Yes,
I did not.
You did too. You missed.
Who's our sponsor?
I don't.
And what's the show about?
It's about getting loans.
Oh,
so your intro is wrong because
Andrew,
you talk about what to do when you have money.
Yeah.
And now we're talking about how to get it from someone else.
Wait a second. It's making it, spending it, saving it, what to do with it when you get it. So I'm going to tell you now.
So how to get it from
make
someone
it.
Else. No, it's not making.
Well, it is.
You're taking.
Form.
You're borrowing.
Oh, please. Okay. We're on every Thursday from 4:30 to 5. Every show is archived and you can on the website, and you can always download a free podcast and take us to the gym and listen to us all the time.
That sounds
well.
Awful.
You can call during the show. We'd love to hear from our listeners. Our phone number is
718-497-2128.
Yep. Or you can email us at info@heritageradionetwork.com. And today's show, as Andrew will tell you, it's all about need some money. That's the name of the show. Need some money. So we're going to talk about how to get some money in the form of a loan. And there's lots of different options. I want to talk about small business people, how they get loans. I want to tell you a bazillion times during my career, I have heard small business people say, oh, I want to start a business and I'm going to get money. They're going to give me money. They're going to give me money. I'm like, who's they? Oh, the government. The government's going to give me money. I'm like, oh, well, yeah, why would they give you money? Oh, there's grants out there. They're going to help me. They're going to help me with my new business and they're going to give me money. That's the dumbest thing I've heard. Well, I shouldn't say dumbest thing. That's not a well-informed person who's going to launch a new business. The government doesn't give you money to launch a new business.
Okay.
And then I tell these people, well, what about you money? Why don't you invest in your own business? Well, why should I use my money? Let them pay for it, them being the government. I'm like, well, how interested would somebody be into investing into your business when you're not even willing to invest into your business? So that's crazy stuff. So the government doesn't give you money to launch your new business. I mean, that's so common. I think that must be on late night TV, those infomercials.
Oh,
I've heard it a gazillion times in my career.
Are you talking about the guy with the question marks on
his
jacket?
No, I'm talking about regular people coming to me.
That guy's awesome.
I don't know about the guy.
Jack, you know the guy I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
There you do. There's a book. He sells a book, and it tells you how to get free money.
Free money. I guess people will watch it. So anyway, there is no such thing. The government's not going to give you money to launch a brand new business. Now, let's say you are getting ready to launch a new business. And you have no money. Well, first of all, I tell you, you have to get money, capitalize your own business. Capitalize meaning you have to fund and invest in your own money into your own business. No one's going to throw dollars at somebody who has no track record. The bank is not going to give you money if you don't have any history. History being at least 2 years being in business. So they're going to give you a loan when you can show that you have the ability to pay back. A brand new business doesn't show anything. And a losing business for a couple of years is not very credit worthy. And the banks are going to shy away from giving money to people who are losing money. Unless you have a unique situation where you have a great contract and you just need money to launch this contract and so forth and so on. Those things happen. But banks are in the business of making money. They're not in the business of taking chances on companies that may or may not be able to pay back. So they're always looking to see, make sure that you can pay them back. The SBA is a government program that uses banks to implement their programs. The SBA is the government securing business loans to small businesses. And what that means is the bank has its criteria to loan money. You have to do A, B, C, D, E. If you pass and qualify all that criteria, then the bank could possibly give you a small business loan. With the SBA guaranteeing, the government guaranteeing loans, the criteria gets looser. So they're freer to lend money because the government is subsidizing or guaranteeing that these loans will be paid. And if they're not paid, the government will pay them to the banks. So the bank has less risk because if you don't pay your loan, the government will get will reimburse the bank. It doesn't necessarily mean the interest rate's going to be cheaper. An SBA loan doesn't mean interest rate is cheaper. It means that the government is securing your loan and the banks will be more willing to lend money to you than if you were just a straight-up business looking for a loan. So those are the things that small business people often face when they want to get loans. Getting loans is hard. It's a hard work. You got to produce all sorts of financial documents and prove that you are credit worthy and that you have the ability to pay the loan back. And the banks in the past 2 years have been terrible about letting money out the door and giving out loans to small business, which has probably made this recession and the financial crisis 100 times worse than it already was. So they pulled back all lending programs, and they kind of stopped lending money to anybody except the extremely, extremely secure creditors that they know will never have a problem collecting their money from. So it really kind of stopped the business world from growing and spinning and new businesses from launching new products and moving forward. So that's what happened over the past couple of years. Now, they have freed up more money. They're trying to push this economy forward. So the government is securing even more money and sending them to the various states, and the banks in turn are loaning out money a lot better than they have been over the past 2 years. So it may be a good time to get a business loan. Make sure you have a business banking relationship. That always helps. And big banks generally don't really work that well with small businesses. You're better off if you're a small business finding a local bank, a community bank, somebody that you have a relationship with. They may be better able to serve you, because Citibank or Chase is really a big company kind of a bank, and they really do much better with big companies. Small companies do better with small banks. That's my opinion. That's what generally happens with small businesses. Andrew, you're not saying anything.
I got a haircut yesterday.
I noticed.
Thanks, Jack.
Well, Jack needs a haircut. No, Jack's grown
his
hair.
It's true. I do need a haircut.
No, he's grown his hair. But what does that have to do with banks and loans?
Well, I had nothing else to add, so you asked me, and I threw something out there.
Okay, now.
That wasn't good?
Do you have any questions or any comments about
the business? Well, I don't think you're correct, but, I was going to save my my 2 cents for later.
What are you talking about? What part wasn't correct?
I know big banks give out money to small businesses.
They do.
Also, there are no small banks in New York City, so it's hard to build a relationship. It's more convenient to work with some of these bigger banks. So it's not like you're giving limited advice there.
I think
you need to open your scope here.
I don't agree with you. So
this is why I didn't mention anything. So I didn't want to argue with you.
Now let's assume you're an individual and you're looking for some money. So right now, obviously the most obvious place to get money is if you have real estate. There are mortgages out there. You can get a mortgage. If you have real estate, you can use the real estate as collateral. Collateral means giving them an asset to hold against the money they loan to you. That's what collateral means. And in the case of real estate, you put your house up and they'll give you up to, generally speaking, 80% of the value of your house in a mortgage, form of a mortgage.
I have a question quickly.
Sure.
So if I have a bunch of recording equipment at home, could that be collateral?
That could be. And that's going to come up in a program, which I'm not that familiar with because most people I know don't go there. But there is a thing called pawn shop loans. And you can always give it to a pawn shop. And that could get you a loan. But those are usually very short-term loans.
And high rate interest rates.
High interest rates, true. But
Jack, I don't think a bank will recognize your asset.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, no, but a pawn shop will.
A pawn shop will, but
they'll undervalue everything.
They will.
No, well, they're not. They're only going to give you 50% of the value. And the reason is a pawn shop loan is you're going to come back in 30 days and pay the money they loan to you, and you get your equipment back. If you don't show up in 30 days, they now own the equipment. So obviously, they, you know, if your equipment is worth $100 and they only give you $50, they're not necessarily going to get $100 for it. They're going to sell it in the pawn shop, and they might make $75 on it. That's why they never give you even close to 100%. They give you a low value.
Doesn't sound good.
But the point is, if you need short-term money, and you know, you have a reason that you need to get this money, and you know that you're going to get it back, then it's an option.
Jack, I know a guy on the corner from down the block from my house that can help you out.
There's also Shylocks. That's on my list too. Shylocks. You know what a Shylock is? It's an old Jewish biblical term, I think. And yeah, I do.
I know what a Shylock is.
I think it comes from the Bible, and it's an old Jewish biblical term. I believe so. So anyway, Shylock is someone who stands on the corner in the 21st century, and he lends money at very high rates, usurious rates, right? That, and if you don't pay him back, you can have broken kneecaps in
a week. Who is the first person to collect interest on loans historically?
Know. Do you know the answer to that?
God.
No, I don't.
God. God doesn't, not in the banking business. No, I don't know either. Maybe one of our listeners can call in with the answer to
How
that.
How would anyone know that answer?
Take a look up on the internet.
Look up the first person to lend money ever.
Maybe.
That is the most retarded thing
ever. Jack asked that question.
I think my haircut comment was better than what you just said.
Can we move on? So if you already own a house and you already have a mortgage and you need more money and you can't get any more money out of your mortgage, it might not be worth it to do a refinance to take more money out. You might want to go for a line of credit home equity loan, and that gets you access to some more money out of your home. That's very common if you have a house that's worth, let's just use an example, $400,000, and you owe $250,000 on it. You might have about $75,000 of equity that could be loaned out to you, but it costs, you know, thousands of dollars to do a refi and get that equity out of the house. So a line of credit is an alternative. It'll get you that $75,000, may get you that $75,000. And the cost to get a home equity loan is very inexpensive. The rates are a little bit higher than a mortgage, but it works for a lot of people in a scenario that I just mentioned. So you don't want to pay refinance costs. You might want to go to home equity line of credit. Car loans, 5%. That's the average. So if you need to buy a car and interest rates are only 5%, I don't think 5% is bad, frankly.
My student loans are still at
5%. Interest rates are pretty low overall.
Why is my student loan still high?
The student loans are up to 7% now. If you go get one now.
Mine's like 5.5%.
Well, because you locked in at the time and that's what it was. That's how it goes. You stay with that rate unless you get a variable. Well, you don't want a variable because...
Well, now it'll be like 2%. Well,
yeah, but it's going to go up. No, they're 7% now.
Really?
So I looked it up today.
My student loan's 2%.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, because
it's a private loan, though.
But mine's a federal loan.
But he also got out of school after you did. Interest rates were higher when you were in school. Jack came out a few years later. Interest rates were lower.
Jack, how old are you?
25.
Okay. No. Do we have to talk about personal business haircuts and ages on my show?
I was just trying to get a point of reference.
Okay.
Well, you made a comment. I want to know.
Plus loans, parent student loans, they're up around 8%. And I've said this before, I'm going to say it again. You should really, if you don't have much money to pay for your college, your kids' college, or you're in college and you don't have much money, it is far cheaper to get student loans than it is to, say, use up your retirement money or go into your home equity line of credit. I think student loans is a great resource when you need money to pay for tuition, not the other alternatives.
Okay. Can parents write off student loan interest?
Yes. Yes, they can.
Question. What if your income is higher than the student loan interest, like the threshold where it's eliminated?
Oh, yeah.
Like, wouldn't it be better to get the home equity line so you can get the mortgage interest to write that
off?
Yeah,
but you know what? A lot of people get stuck paying the student loan interest then for 10, 15, 20, 30 years, and that's lousy. If they tie it into their mortgages.
Well, I'm saying if you get a line of credit.
Well, it's true, but
you get a better tax write-off.
It's
that way.
True. That's true. So look you have that. To look at that.
Smart.
Andrew's so smart. I wasn't going to go into the little details. I'm just telling you it's student loan
interest.
Just a
question that popped in my head.
Student loan interest is a good source of borrowing, okay? We have a couple of more things I want to talk about, but I think we should take a break for a minute and come back and finish up our loan discussion, okay? We'll be right back.
The best thing in life is free. You can give it to the birds and bees. I need money.
I didn't want it. I didn't want it. Oh, yeah, that's what I want. Your love give me such a thrill, but your love don't pay my bills. I need money. I need money. I need money. Oh, yeah, that's what I want.
March 27th, Dr. Temple Grandin, best-selling author and world-renowned animal behavior expert who has designed humane animal handling facilities all over the world. Join hosts Katie Kiefer and Patrick Martins on the main course at 1 p.m. on Sunday, March 27th, as they get an in-depth look at the livestock industry and how it's changing.
Okay, we're back. Flash Talks Cash. She wants to know, do you need some money? We're talking about how to get loans. We talked about business loans, and we're talking now, we're going to finish up our discussion on personal loans.
What about unsecured personal loans?
Well, that's what I'm going to talk about. Unsecured means you don't have any collateral, such as Jack's recording equipment, or a car, or a house. That would be collateral. If you have nothing, it's called an unsecured loan, and those loans are much more expensive than secured loans because there's a higher risk. So the companies that are loaning that money out to people, and those rates are pretty high, and they're hard to get. The loans are hard to get.
It's like a credit card, almost.
It could be considered a credit card. And, you know, they make sure if you have bad credit, you're never going to get it. If you have really good credit, you could get one. The interest rates, as I said, are they start at 7%, but they go up depending on your credit score and how much you're borrowing and a whole lot of other factors. Credit cards, the average credit card, if you need to borrow money, is between 12 and 14%.
On cash advances?
Well, it just says the average rate. I don't know what the cash advances are, but if you're going to need to buy stuff.
Money or a credit card interest rate.
Credit card interest rates, average. So since interest rates are relatively low in most loan arenas.
Not on credit cards,
paying 12 and 14% is quite high. And I have seen too many people launch their new businesses on credit cards, and it's so difficult to get out from under. It takes years to get out from under because a new business doesn't automatically generate lots of money. So it's hard to, get out from under the credit card debt. The last thing I wanted to talk about on launching a new business is there's this program, and there's a few of these websites called Kickstart. Kickstart is a non-for-profit organization which matches people who need money, generally poor people who have a really good idea for a business, and then people who say, oh, I like that business, I'm going to invest, and you can invest small increments of money. And it's like a grant to the entrepreneur. And you could get a few thousand dollars through Kickstart. Kickstart takes a percentage as a fee, and then the person who invested gets a little bit of ownership somehow or another. I don't know how that works. But it happens with very poor, in poor countries. It's been going on for a long time. Somebody, you know, needs a certain kind of machine, and they came up with the machine. It's going to generate a lot of revenue. Or I see it's going on now in the creative community in the U.S. If someone wants to, say, shoot a film, and they go and Kickstart, and they put their film idea up on the website, there are some people who will throw money at you, and you'll get a few bucks that way. So, and there's a few of those organizations out there. So there's opportunities out there. You might not be able to go the standard bank loan kind of way, and you might have to be creative in your financing and getting your money.
Some of the guys at Roberta's, the Brooklyn Grange, they raised $20,000 on Kickstarter.
See, it works. I met with a client yesterday, and she got a few thousand dollars to do her TV show. So I'm hearing about it more and more and more, and it's an alternative in the creative community in the United States. It started out differently, but now that's where it's gone these days. And I looked it up today, and there's a handful of these organizations, not just this one. So look into it if you need it, okay? So if you that's it for today on the loans. If you have any questions, call Andrew. He knows everything about loans. He used to work at a bank. And now we're going to go.
You still do call me for stuff like that. It's retarded. I haven't worked in a bank in 7 years.
Well, now we're going to go to.
What kind of interest does Andrew offer on his loans?
Oh, Jack, if they have questions, I do have loans to offer.
Nice. But the surprise interest rate?
That's case by case basis.
Gotcha.
You guys.
So we got an email in the mailbag, guys.
Oh, we got an email. Good. Read it to us.
This one's coming from Steve, and it's for Flash, not Andrew. I don't see Andrew's name on this.
Wow.
If I live in New York City and work in New Jersey, do I pay taxes to two states? Isn't that double taxation?
Without representation. Oh, it's no taxation without representation.
Well, double taxation without representation is twice as bad. So
it's a different argument.
The answer, Andrew, do you know the answer to
yes,
this?
Yes, no, you don't pay tax in two states. You get a credit in your state of residency.
Right. So
for the taxes paid in the state where
right,
you're working.
So when you work in New Jersey and live in New York, you file a New Jersey tax return, and whatever taxes you paid in New Jersey, you take a credit against your New York tax. So you only pay tax once.
I had a friend
on the same
ask me the same question today.
Yeah, well, that's a very common question. Actually, the question came from somebody who works in Canada and lives in New York City. So
that's weird.
It is. I did ask him more questions than that. So he flies back and forth. But you get the same concept in a foreign country. If you pay taxes in a foreign country and you live in New York, you will get a credit for the taxes you paid in the foreign country.
Foreign tax credit.
Foreign tax credit. And you won't pay tax twice. The goal of the tax systems all around the world is to pay tax once. You may have to pay it in different places, but pay tax once on that same income.
It's a sort of balancing act, you know. A lot of people then pay taxes here if they live somewhere else.
Yes, yes. So that's the end of our email, but we do have Andrew and the Law today. It's an interesting one.
It's by far my favorite part of the show.
Today, we're talking...
Why do you always ruin my music? Stop.
We're talking
Stop.
About...
Stop.
You know how the IRS
Stop.
Bills you? This time, there's a way to get the IRS to pay you for something. Did you have any idea?
That you overpay your taxes.
No. They're paying you for something. Not overpay. This is called the whistleblower rewards.
Oh, I don't even want to hear about them.
Why is that?
I don't like rats.
Well... Listen, you know...
If you want to make your money ratting on other people, go for it.
Stop snitching.
Exactly.
Well, I believe in this. I'll tell you why. When people rip off...
Because you're a rat. I got it. You're a rat.
Rip
you
off,
love it.
When people rip off companies or the government, ultimately the remaining people who do pay their fair share through goods, services, and taxes have to pay more for the losses that the government and the companies are incurring. So, and I'm not talking about... These are not... small cases. I mean, the guy from Enron, the guy who did the whistleblowing in Enron,
yeah,
he got $1.1 million reward.
Right.
Yeah, well, that means the government recovered quite a bit of money that Enron was skimming, okay? So it's pretty interesting stuff. It's called False Claims Act, okay? And the whistleblowers, known as the relators... Okay, we'll get a percentage of the money that the government recovers as a result of these lawsuits. They're entitled to a reward of 15 to 25% of what the government recovers if the government joins the case. If the government declines to join the case, the lawsuit, the whistleblower then can get between 25 to 35% of the recovery. And so up to date, and this I got this off today, the rewards so far paid out $2.2 billion. That's some way to make a living.
A lot of rats jumping off this ship, huh?
Yeah, well. Okay, the government may recover up to three times the amount of money it lost as a result of the defendant's fraud. So if you skimmed off $1 million, they could get up to $3 million with penalties. And so then you could get your finder's fee on the $3 million, the percentage on the $3 million.
So make a lot of shady friends. And then,
apparently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Okay.
What if my friend's not paying taxes? Can I just tell on him?
You know... I don't think that's really what the whistleblowers, because the program is all about. The IRS gets tons of leads from disgruntled employers, from divorced spouses, from all sorts of things like you're mad at your friends.
That's horrible.
That's really awful.
People send
that's
in
awful.
Anonymous letters constantly.
People
and
need
frankly,
to stop snitching on other people.
Frankly,
you
the
live your own damn life.
The IRS doesn't even follow up on
they
a lot
can.
Of them.
Then they just send out auditors for everyone else.
Well, they send
I understand the Enron thing, but like, okay. Come on.
Wait,
like,
watch this. Let me give you some of the idea of the Whistleblower Act, some of the payouts, okay? First, you got to notice that I'm going to give you a handful of people. a lot of them are former employees.
Of course they are.
Former. Because there's many factors, including what will happen to you in your professional and your personal life when you do blow the whistle. And the people who file the lawsuits have to be prepared to spend a tremendous amount of time and effort working on these cases. So the money doesn't drop down from the sky and all of a sudden you got $1 million. You really work hard to get this money. But if they decide to take the risk because it's the right thing to do,
boo this man.
I don't agree with you. So listen,
watch this.
A former pharmaceutical sales rep brought a case against Pfizer. Wait,
is
Pfizer.
Is this like The Informant, that movie with Matt Damon?
Pfizer.
That was a funny movie.
That was good.
That was funny.
Could you let me do my
me
show?
Me and Jack are having a
I
show by ourselves.
I think you and Joe, Jack can have a conversation with Jack and Andrew.
We
you
should.
Have your own show, okay?
I think you should go
you
back and start engineering, and me and Jack could sit here and talk about stuff.
So, can I tell you what Pfizer did?
No, no one cares about the rats.
I do.
Why do you care about the rats?
I want my listeners to hear. They can make their own decision. You don't care about the rats. I'm going to read it. So, Pfizer was engaged in off-label marketing of this painkiller in dangerous doses and unsafe uses. As a result, Pfizer paid $1.8 billion.
It's like Charlie Sheen says, read the label before you do the drugs.
In civil and criminal penalties as part of a $2.3 billion Medicare fraud settlement with the government. That's outrageous. A hospital employee exposed the hospital's practice of billing Medicare and Medicaid for treatment of patients who weren't covered by the programs. Okay? This is terrible. A former senior product manager for the nation's largest hospital purchasing company exposed practices involving improper payments and fees that affect, in effect, cheated Medicare. A registered nurse brought a case against the hospital that employs her. An investment banker revealed Wall Street's secret scam in the municipal bond market. A former hospital executive uncovered Medicare fraud by the nation's largest for-profit hospital chain and the country's largest hospital management company. It's bad. And an eye surgeon brought a case against his former employer and a fellow surgeon for Medicare fraud. It is very, very common in the Medicare and Medicaid programs. It's unfortunately, it's rampant in those programs.
It's everywhere.
And the whistleblower program helps bring more.
Someone else will pop up and start it all over again. So what's the difference?
No, if it involves someone's health, I think it's a little better.
But it's not health, Jack. It's the billing of it.
Wait
it's
a
the
second.
Money.
We got to pay more taxes because Medicare is broke.
I take it rid of Medicare. Screw it all.
And what are the people going to do when they don't have insurance?
Die.
Oh, see now.
Damn.
You know,
what? If you can't afford it, don't get it.
This is back to Andrew versus the old people.
Yes, not even old people, just everybody. If you
the uninsured broke, now, he's taking on the uninsured.
I'm taking on everybody
and the poor people.
If you're too broke to afford it, you can't do it. You die.
So they shouldn't have health insurance, or they shouldn't have any medical treatment because they can't afford it.
Yes.
Wow.
Man, imagine if you were born without a kidney.
Shit on me.
You should have just
Damn.
Put you me should
down.
Let that baby die.
Put me down.
A wretched, sad life.
Well, if he has one kidney, he can still survive.
Yeah, but suppose he has a problem and he's not having a good
life.
If
you can't afford the services, I don't know.
The angry emails are pouring in.
Oh, shut up.
Oh, Kat. My God. I think we should play that theme song and just go off the air right now. Because
I think... Never mind. I'll talk about it next
week. We'll talk next week. Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. The following is a public service announcement from Beer Sessions Radio. Beyond the human and environmental casualties of the triple threat disaster in Japan, there will likely also be losses to our collective food culture, from miso and sake makers to outstanding fisheries. With help from the New York State Brewers Association, the Good Beer Seal, Beer Sessions Radio, and craft breweries alike, Jimmy Carboni is hoping to raise funds that will go directly to Hitachino, an excellent Japanese brewery, through a benefit at Brooklyn Brewery next Monday, March 28th, from 7 to 10 p.m.
In addition to beer, there'll be food from the Meat Hook, Jimmy's No. 43, Waterfront Ale House, and a few local Japanese restaurants. All money raised will go to Kyuchi Brewery and Hitachino Beers, which they will distribute via humanitarian aid locally. To date, the brewery, which lost 500 bottles in the earthquake and suffered some damage to its physical plant, is filtering and bottling water for its community and providing them with food. You can read a letter about the quake's aftermath to Jimmy from Toshiyuki Kyuchi, the brewery owner, on his site. And you can buy tickets to the benefit on brownpapertickets.com/event/166978. That's brownpapertickets.com/event/166978. The following is a public service announcement from the Museum of Food and Drink. Dave Arnold and Patrick Martins have gathered a team of New York's most innovative chefs and bartenders to create a 9-course fundraiser lunch at Del Posto, Sunday, March 27th. Their intent? To kickstart the greatest food museum in the world. The menu for this unprecedented event is derived from educational themes of the museum. Chefs will draw inspiration from sources outside their normal sphere. How will a cutting-edge chef handle the Paleolithic, or a dish only using pre-Columbian ingredients? What will a modern Italian chef do with ancient Rome? The chefs include David Chang of Momofuku, Wiley Dufresne of WD-50, Mark Ladner of Del Posto, Nils Noren of the French Culinary Institute, Cesare Casella of Salumeria Rossi, Carlo Maracci of Roberta's, Brooks Headley of Del Posto, and Christina Tozzi of Momofuku Milk Bar. Bartenders include Audrey Sanders of Pegu Club, Thomas Waugh of Death & Company, Simon Ford of Pernod Ricard, Damon Bolte of Prime Meats, and Eben Clem of BR Guest Restaurants. Proceeds from the event will directly support the Museum of Food and Drink. Tickets are very limited and $250 per person. To purchase tickets, please visit mofad.eventbrite.com. That's mofad.eventbrite.com. Once again, mofad.eventbrite.com. Sponsored by Pernod Ricard, Heritage Foods USA, Pat LaFrieda Meats, Barterhouse Wines, Del Posto Restaurant.